ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife history.
Well, it's a slow process, but increasingly Australians are becoming aware that there's been a huge gap in the telling of Australia's history. We've marked Remembrance Day a while back. We could also remember how the continent witnessed full-on warfare. For more than 150 years after colonisation, there were battles and casualties, carnage and killing that was largely covered up, ignored and undocumented for much of the nation's past. These were what are now called the Australian Wars. Perhaps 100,000 people died in the frontier conflict that raged across Australia for more than 150 years, which is equivalent to all the combined total of all Australians killed in all foreign battles to date. The combatants, of course, were Indigenous people, organised and determined, fighting over sovereignty and control of land. But while the Australian War Memorial and other historical displays closely detail Australian involvement in foreign wars, there are few, if any, memorials marking these first pivotal and important nation-establishing domestic wars. In 2022, a three-part documentary series about the frontier wars screened on SBS. It was directed and narrated by Indigenous Australian filmmaker Rachel Perkins. Now, you'd be familiar with her work, which includes Total Control, Mystery Road, Redfern Now, Brand New Day. There's plenty more. And her Australian Aboriginal heritage has inspired much of her work. And The Australian Wars was a landmark series. It used interviews and reenactments and archaeological research and original documents to explore the conflicts and massacres as they spread from first settlements in Sydney across Tasmania, Queensland and beyond. Well, Rachel, together with historian Stephen Gapps, Mina Murray and Henry Reynolds, have now published a collection of historical historical accounts in a new book which is called The Australian Wars, The Truth About the Bloody Battles That Were Fought to Establish the Nation. Rachel joins us in the studio this evening. Rachel, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's been insomnia and willful blindness, deliberate obfuscation. You were inspired by your own family heritage to address this gap in the national awareness. Tell us about your own family history that inspired you to begin work.
Well, I'm part of my heritage is Aranda, so mm-hmm. through my father's mother. So her great-grandmother was a survivor of a massacre around the 1880s, 1890s, mm-hmm. we think, in Central Australia, just northeast of Alice Springs. Her and her sister were spared, but many were killed in a site that's now called Blackfellas Bones. It's actually marked on the map.
Still.
Yeah, and it was called that because the bodies were left where they were to just, you know, in the sun. And so I have a very personal connection to the story, which is partly why I thought I'd actually put myself into the documentary series when it was made. And I went back to that place called Blackfellas Bones. So I'd heard about the rape and the subsequent rape plus the massacre that my great-grandmother was involved in. So I knew bits of the history. I also had heard from my father, you know, stories about people being pushed off the cliffs in Tasmania. And I Aboriginal people. So I grew up with this knowledge. I knew about the fight in Kalkadoons, which is my grandfather's side, my father's father's side. So I knew fragments of this history. And, of course, I read Henry Reynolds' book, The Other Side of the Frontier, back in the mid-80s, which was the sort of kickoff, really, of telling this sort of history. But I never learnt, like probably most of your listeners, I never learned any of this history in school, that there were these battles, warfare, violence on the frontier. I just didn't learn it at all. And I'm 55 at the moment.
Nobody did.
No, hardly. I mean, there are some exceptions. Sometimes people put up their hand, because I often ask when I'm in forums, who learned about this? There are the rare exceptions, but mostly it wasn't taught in schools. But what is true, though, is that at the time, it was very much discussed. Like, in the Sydney Gazette at the time, which was reporting, you know, what happened in New South Wales. There was lots of coverage in Tasmania. Governor Arthur called it a war. Lots of the official documents talk about the warfare they were involved in, this war, the settlers, you know. All the primary records at the time document the warfare that was going on. But we went through this period where that that just sort of the when, you know, Federation happened, this new story of the Australian nation, the only Australian nation, you know, nation peacefully settled, this sort of new narrative came along, which sort of meant that there was this gap in the history of our country. So that's what this book is trying to represent, really, after all this time, the primary source and other oral histories, like the one that's been passed down to my, through me, to my family, you know, to represent this to Australian people so that they can just understand a bit of the past.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's often said that every generation writes its own history because it writes its own stories.
Yes.
And the story that the broader Australian public has been imbued with for decades is the story of the, you know, of settlement, of squatters, the sheep's back, the conquering against terrible natural odds, drought and flood and fire, etc., and all the difficulties that people...
Well, that is all, that's a lot of that's true, of course.
Of course. Yes, that's a story.
Yeah.
That is a story, but it's a story that's been told as almost as a blanket which covers all the other stories that were going on at the same time, which... And yes. A key part of the story, you know, particularly in Queensland, a key part of the story was the, you know, the deliberate waging of war to get Aboriginal people off their land so that all these things could take place.
Yes, I think, you know, we know that people have a problem with this history, right?
Mm.
So it's challenged by a lot of people. You know, it wasn't a war. How could it have been a war? It wasn't ever declared. You know, these small wars that happened, right? So this is a controversial subject, even in Australia today, even though we're
using... Well, the use of the word war is, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Even that in itself is controversial. Mm. But, you know, the thing is, at settlement, what we call settlement, at the when the occupation of this country began by the Crown, in not allowing for any... property rights for Aboriginal people or Torres Strait Islanders, they set in train an inevitable battle over the country because pastoralists thought it necessary to clear their runs in most cases, not all cases, you know, there were some good relationships, of course, on the frontier, but pastoralists felt it necessary to secure their runs, right, that they had a lease for, you know, or that they were squatting on and they had to clear the Aboriginal people, you know, to shore up their fortunes and their security. So by the British not allowing for any property rights for Aboriginal people, they did set in train a conflict over land. And that conflict went wherever the sheep and cattlemen that are part of our national narrative, you know, the swagmen, the battler, the great outdoorsmen who did exist and were tough people who went out onto the frontier, but they did so at a cost to the Aboriginal people whose land it was.
Strangely, though, what's interesting about Australia is that this story wasn't unique to Australia in the sense that it happened in North America with the native populations of North America. It happened in New Zealand.
Well,
and
in
both those places, they used the term war without difficulty.
Yes. In both those places, though... They had treaties, of course, and in Australia was the exception. In Canada, which was occupied at a similar time, and this is a point that Henry Reynolds makes very well, they had treaties, right? Mm. And it meant that there was much less bloodshed, because they had organised agreements with the Aboriginal people of Canada. Here we didn't have those agreements, so... That's what I'm saying about that point. It set in train inevitable violence by not having an agreement with Aboriginal people and not giving any recognition of land rights. But yes, this is our own local version of a much wider story that's called imperialism, that swept across the globe for the last, you know, 400 or 500 years as Europeans, you know, empires moved out to claim what they called the New World. So it happened in Africa, it happened in America, it happened in... you know, all of those places. So but this is just our own unique version of it, right? Mm. And I suppose in looking at this series and the book, we did use the word war and we called it the Australian Wars. In a way, we were inspired by Aotearoa New Zealand, where recently they changed the term Māori Wars to the New Zealand Wars because it's the wars that founded New Zealand, as these are the wars that founded our country.
It was a war of conquest. There's no other way to look at it.
Well, how else did the sovereignty of the country pass from one people to another? It happened through, it had to be taken.
You describe in your book how you made a trip to the Australian War Memorial when you were eight and had dealings with it for the TV series as well. Tell us about your emotions visiting as a child and watching all the dioramas of these foreign wars.
Yeah, look, I think, can I firstly say that the War Memorial is a place that I have great respect for. And I have great respect for the men and women who serve our country and make the great sacrifice and have fought on behalf of our nation. And in talking about the warfare that occurred in Australia prior to the wars that the Australian Defence Force has been involved in, I don't mean to take away from those achievements, sacrifices and the bravery of Australian men and women. This is not what I am trying to do. I am just merely trying to open a window for Australians onto another part of our history. But I went there as a little girl and I was, struck with a very deep sense of fear and I suppose a desperate hope that I would never be or my family would never be involved in a war because you see it laid out very effectively, the terrible conditions and terrible things that happen in theatres of war. And I just forever hoped that I would never be involved in that. And so it struck me with a deep fear of war and an appreciation for those who go through that on behalf of their nation. And I felt very privileged to be able to film there as part of the documentary series. But I didn't quite understand until I went to make the documentary series much later why the War Memorial exists. And that is that many of our Australian men and women died whilst serving overseas and their bodies could never be returned. And so the names on those amazing plaques as you go into the, I think it's called the Hall of Memory, I can't remember, you know, represent the grave sites of those people. And so that's why it is a place of pilgrimage for many Australian families who go there to honour their family who they might never be able to go to their grave site. So it's a very sacred place for that reason. And that's why I don't wish to disrespect it in any way.
No. There's been a push for a while to have the Australian Wars represented in the War Memorial too. There's been some shift on this from the Memorial too, hasn't there?
Yes. The War Memorial doesn't deny that there was frontier violence. They're very clear that that happened and they acknowledge it in a small part and have for a while. But they believe that the appropriate recognition, or they have believed that the appropriate recognition of those conflicts should be elsewhere. For instance, in the National Museum, that was its previous policy. We've seen a shift recently. And let's be clear that this is quite a contested issue, and which we need to be very sensitive about because of the respect that we have for that place and what it means to Australians. So what some argue is that it shouldn't be there. These frontier conflicts shouldn't be there because, for instance, they occurred before Federation, right? Or some of them did. It was still going on in the Kimberley in Northern Australia after Federation. But
Coniston Massacre was in the 20s.
Yeah. Coniston Massacre, you know, Kimberley, the Killing Times was all in the, you know, after 1901, after Federation. But the War Memorial does recognise people who died in wars that Australians were engaged in prior to 1901. It's got the Boer War there. It's got people who died in fighting in the Maori Wars there. Well, now the New Zealand Wars. So it does have a pre-colonial section. So one can't use that argument. And when do we celebrate Australia Day, so-called? Anyway, we celebrate it. Anyway, that you can get into a circular argument about these things. But look, the thing is, it does acknowledge pre-colonial warfare. I think they've said that it does exist. They haven't denied it. What they've said is just that it would be better elsewhere. What other people's views, and it is my view, is that it is the institution that is there to represent warfare on behalf of the Australian people and those who died in warfare. So this warfare was the warfare that really founded modern Australia, and you can accept that or not, but it's true. It's all there in the primary sources, and those primary sources are written by eyewitness non-Indigenous people, not Aboriginal people in the large. And so if we have a national institution that represents warfare and those who died in those conflicts, then why wouldn't you put in those wars that occurred in Australia as well? It doesn't have to. It doesn't have to take away from the later wars, the First World War, Second World War, Vietnam, Korea, etc. It doesn't have to take away from that. It's just another chapter in the Australian experience of warfare.
Another one of our story, of our stories, exactly, that that hasn't been told, yeah. Rachel Perkins has been our guest, a filmmaker and co-editor of a book called The Australian Wars. Now, it's, in a sense, off the back of the SBS series from 2022, but there's a huge amount of material here, which I think people, I don't know, I was speaking with Henry Reynolds on the program here not so long ago, Rachel. He was suggesting that he thinks there has, I mean, things are changing in terms of how people read Australian history. That is, ordinary people. It may be slow, but is it happening, do you think?
I think so. I think so. I think it's still a controversial topic. I wanted to sort of say that what this book does, because television is a bit of a, it's effective in a way that the television series gets into people's lounge rooms, they have an emotional experience, they can see it's very accessible. What this book does is it gives you the national picture, right? There's never been a book before that takes the whole country and looks at the whole country. Most of these histories are written by very dedicated historians who spend 20 years researching in their local area and doing a history on Victoria or Tasmania or Southern Queensland or whatever. This book brings all of that together. And I think what's really interesting is you see the big changes and the way that the warfare changed as technology changed, how environments were different, and that changed the warfare. So you see this huge sweep of history, which you can't really get unless you read all the books. Well, now you've got one that's got everything in it. You know, obviously there's deeper detail in other books. But like from 1788 to 1830, what you can broadly say is that Aboriginal people, and whether it was squatters or English Marines or whoever they were, whoever the combatants were, they were pretty much on an equal par, right? And then the second part, because the book's divided into three parts, in the second part you see that the odds change as the squatters and the Marines or the mounted police get on horses, that really changes the dynamic. And they get over the Blue Mountains and sweep into the major grasslands across the frontier of Australia. And the land grants accelerate. The price of wool goes through the roof. You see huge fortunes made in exportation of wool. And there's a massive dispossession of Aboriginal people off their lands. So the 1830s to 1860s, it's a period of one of the biggest expansions in the world of colonial, you know, of colonisation across the Australian continent. From 1860, the weaponry changes. So repeater rifles come in and we see the native police force brought into Queensland and native police or trackers used across the north. And so from 1860s on, you're seeing the number of people massacred on the Aboriginal side hugely increased to hundreds of people because of repeater rifles. And we're seeing that the advantage that they used to have, Aboriginal people, is neutralised by either Aboriginal trackers or native police. So, you know, the warfare changes, and in this book you see the big sweep of it and the big historical changes, and I think that will be new for readers and people who are interested in this sort of history.
It's very important. It's called The Australian Wars, and it's available now. Rachel, it's been terrific to talk with you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.